Take a walk through Seoul's 500 years of ghastly murders, forbidden history, and hidden scandals. Listen to tales of Korea's deepest, darkest secrets. What lies under the concrete? Or who? The Dark Side of Seoul Ghost Walk at darksideofseoul.com. Book now, if you dare.
And welcome to the Dark Side of Seoul podcast. This is Joe.
And this is Sean.
I think I'm acting a little serious today. Oh, wow.
Oh, weird. Are you drunk?
No, but I am having a glass in honor of, we're talking about the anniversary of the Sewol ferry disaster 10 years ago. When this will be released, I'm gonna make sure we release it on the day. So,
Right.
And it's, we, in the early days of our podcast, we made a, not a promise, but an idea to do a show about the Sewol once a year around the anniversary time.
Right.
With a different topic related to the Sewol.
Right. We've only done one, though. That was just, wasn't last year.
We've done one separately. We've done one separately about conspiracy theories.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But we are now on the 10-year... I hate the word anniversary, because that just sounds... But it is literally what it is. Anna means, like, year.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't have to mean like, I think it's a neutral... Yeah, it's a neutral term. Yeah. Neutral word. Like whatever it's marking determines whether it's joyous or not, mm-hmm. or somber, mm-hmm. or what have you.
Yeah. Yeah. So today we're going to talk a bit about, so that's been 10 years.
10 years. Jeez. It's amazing. Yeah,
I know. I remember everything from that time, but that was a very different era in Korea.
It's definitely one of those, it's one of those events that shaped everything that went forward, how people viewed things.
Right.
For sure. Where you remember where you were and stuff like that.
I remember exactly where I was. I remember exactly the seat I was on the subway.
Mm.
I remember how the subway smelled. I remember everything when I found out.
Mm.
But it's one of those, you know, it's demarcation lines pre this and post this. I kind of say Gangnam Style was sort of that too, as far as pop culture goes in Korea, in Korean culture, Korean confidence in itself.
Right.
After Gangnam Style started being less of trying to impress all the time and started being more confident about itself.
Mm-hmm.
But Sewol was a big one where. How to describe it? It just, I wouldn't say lost its innocence. The Korean War lost its innocence. But it was a new way of a new version of community. But it was good. Korea came more together and torn apart even further in many ways. Is that a good thing to say?
Yeah. I mean, I often tend to think that the disaster is the prime reason why Park Geun-hye was impeached, or the prime reason.
Talk about today. I'm going to talk a little bit more about today. I'm not shattering some myths, but I'm going to clarify some stuff today about that.
All right. Okay.
Because when I was working on the notes, I was talking to one of our guides, Tanny, and she's, I don't think she wants me to tell her age on the air, but she's just slightly older than the students were that were on the ship.
And, right.
And I was asking her, like, I mean, what do you feel about it? She goes, I really don't think about it unless someone brings it up.
Hmm.
And she says, well, most people don't, but I think that's her age group too. I think she said, because she's so close in age to them that, it didn't really affect her as much, I guess, cause she was young. She said that it might affect me more because I was more of an adult and also I have children.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that hurt me a lot more. But when you're a child, you don't really care as much about children dying. That's why I can't watch Hunger Games, but kids can. Children has trouble watching the Hunger Games.
Yeah, I've never seen it, but that's probably certainly true for some people. But it definitely people, there's probably other people her age and a little bit closer to the age of the kids at the time who are thinking that could have been me.
Yeah.
As well. And I mean, you know, certain events like this definitely highlight mortality and
yeah.
We're not escaping. No one's escaping it.
And some of them could have been my students from my first year in Korea because I taught in that mm-hmm. same town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Don't know. Don't know. I will never know.
Yeah. We don't know how we're connected. So in Newfoundland in the early 80s, there was 1982, I think it was. In February, it was called the Ocean Ranger. It was an okay. oil platform. It was a platform.
Oh, platform. And, yeah, rig. Yeah, an oil rig.
An oil rig, and it capsized, and no one survived, it was because of the era. And whatnot, and Newfoundland just generally where all those people were from, with the population being small, it was often said you couldn't go 3 or 4 degrees of separation without meeting someone that you knew who knew someone who died.
Wow.
So yeah, that's probably what
to capsize one of those oil rigs. Cause you know, I'm from the Gulf Coast and we're always, we went on the boat. We're always near those oil rigs. That's where the good fishing is.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. So, there's always, so I'd imagine that that's kind of what it's like for the people in Andong. The degrees
of separation. Ansan.
Ansan. Yes. sorry about that. Yeah. Ansan. So the degrees of separation of knowing someone who died in the disaster is probably pretty small.
Yeah, I think I should, before we go further, we should recap what happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you're just tuning in, and so that's the other thing is we're so far removed now. I have to tell, if I mention the Sewol on my tours, less and less guests these days know what that is. And even when I say what it is, they don't remember it. So it's starting to already fade from the public consciousness.
Well, out of Korea, yeah. I mean, because it's not. Definitely out of Korea. I'm certain it is. It's not. Yeah. It's not something that really has. I think at the time it caught on, and it made a lot of international news, of course, because it was so tragic. But things like this tend to just in this modern era as well, where we get information so quickly. Memories and concerns are so short.
Right. And so, right. And I mean, and I, when I was researching this, I just remembered it brought up to my attention that, yeah, soon after the Sewol, the summer of this, after the Sewol, similar accident happened in the Mediterranean where more people were killed. We didn't remember one.
I'm trying to remember that. Yeah, which was that?
Yeah,
was,
only when was that I saw it, Italian? I remembered it. Yeah, yeah, the Italian one. Yeah,
the Italian boat. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Was that the same year?
Yeah, it was that summer.
Wow. Okay.
So as April 16th, 2014, the Sewol was a ferry that was going from Incheon down to Jeju. And there, while it was passing between the southern part of Korea, the Korean Peninsula, and Jeju Island, it hit some bad currents and lots of bad things happened, and it capsized. And in the end, 304 people were killed. It was capsized when third mate and the helmsman made too sharp of a turn because the captain, Ejun Suk, which I'm pretty sure, I think he's in prison now, in his crew, where they were drinking beer. They ordered the passengers to stay put, and those who disobeyed survived. Everyone else died, while the captain and crew abandoned the ship. Three crew members stayed and helped them die. No, I read when I was doing my research that in the investigations, one of the reasons they initially said to not panic was before there was another incident of a ship sinking, and it was because they announced it too early. More people were killed than were saved or something like that. It caused more of a problem. So they were thinking, and they were afraid that if everyone started rushing, it would make the ship lean. It was before it capsized. It would make the ship list more if people started running to the top of the ship and started running on one side. So they thought if everyone just stayed there, the ship would be balanced and wouldn't tip. Yeah, and also when the crew was leaving, I mean, some of the crew actually, one of the crew members actually went back on board to retrieve his phone and still didn't give an order to evacuate. So, yeah.
Just a quick interjection with this particular point. We talked about it before, is that part of the tragedy is that the kids, everyone, but especially the kids who are on the ferry, they listened to being told not to evacuate, even though it was listing so badly. We know that because there are video of
very nightmarish
a cell phone
video. Yeah,
where they're all wearing life jackets and they're on the floor with their feet on the tables, which are of course are bolted down and stuff like that. Yeah. And they're approaching a 45 degree angle, and you know, that's a huge part of the tragedy, is that they were told to stay and they trusted the authorities. Yeah. And so I've wondered if something has shifted since.
That's not a good word to use, son. I'm sorry.
Well, I didn't. Pun was not intended. Something has changed. Is that better? Something has changed.
I'm sorry, man. I'm actually starting to tear up. I'm good. I'm sorry. I'm getting emotional on this one. Yeah.
So I'm curious if something has changed in the social consciousness of listening to authority. Because this in my mind, this is often in my, well, has been in my mind when I've mentioned to my daughter before, authority, no one, but especially authority, deserves inherently to be listened to. No one deserves that. They have to deserve respect and whatnot. It doesn't matter that someone's older than you. And this is really anti-Confucian. It's anti-Korean culture. But in a way, I don't care. My wife, who's Korean, agrees with me. You're polite to people in a social setting. You use the proper Korean language when you're speaking to older people and whatnot. But if an older person or an authority figure is telling you to do something where you're consciously realizing, I don't think they're right, then you bail. You say, sorry, I'm not listening to you. You're putting me in danger. So I wonder if there's been a certain change in the consciousness of at what point do you say authority doesn't need to be listened to?
Yeah.
It's
hard for me to think right off the top of my hand, of any incidents that since then where that could have been challenged, that we could record that. I mean, we've had other tragedies, but like the Itaewon crush had nothing to do with authority.
No.
That had to do with authority, again, abandoning its people.
Yeah, but not in the sense where people were being told to stay put. Kind of thing is different. Yeah, so that's something that's on my mind now and again. How does that if that change is has implemented itself or has been implemented, I should say, into the society. Because I've certainly taught my daughter that, and say, well, it was a, I think I'm kind of like that. My personality's like that anyway. But
yeah, I'm sort of that way too with Gian, and I'm really more about trying to get her to be independent, which she's being very independent. Get ready for your daughter to start doing this someday. I'm in the middle of rehearsals for my play, which when this comes out, it's actually, and we're in the middle of performance, Midsummer Night's Dream, Soul Shakespeare Company, up until the end of April, over at the Dari Theater in Hongdae. $25,000 a person. No, $25,001 a person, and it's in English with Korean subtitles. Anyway, so we're doing dress rehearsal. We're doing tech rehearsal at the theater in Hongdae, and then my daughter sends me a text. It's like, Dad, I'm in Yeouido. Can you send me 10,000 won? I'm like, you're at fucking Yeouido? We live on Gimpo. I mean, that means she had to get on the subway and go into the city. That's pretty ballsy move to make. I don't know, transportation decision to make to go all the way into. And so I talked to her mother and I was like, did you know she was in Yeouido today? She goes, she said before she was thinking of doing it, but I didn't know she was in it. She didn't tell me today that she was going to go there. All right. So there's the mystery, because when I saw her earlier that night, I was like, okay, you went to Yeouido to see the cherry blossoms? She goes, no, I didn't see the cherry blossoms. I'm like, why are you in Yeouido? So maybe she was opening a bank account or something? I don't know. But anyway, this is my digression. But yeah, now she's in Yeouido. My point is I'm encouraging her independence.
Yeah.
But I wish she'd tell me these things before she does these things.
No, for sure. Yeah.
Doesn't keep me from worrying so much. I'm like, do it, but tell me ahead of time you're going to do it.
Yeah. So anyway, that's just something that's just personally on my mind.
Yeah.
Now and again, this, it's hard to articulate it, but, if only something was, even one little thing was different. One little thing was different. So many more kids would have got off.
Yeah. Oh, just to clarify, my daughter running around Seoul, she's 13. Context. I have to remember context. I have to keep remembering that you know, a lot of our listeners, they're not keeping up with everything we say on this show, with every episode and all of our details that we tell.
No.
So, you know, no one's keeping track of my daughter's age. I just finished my whiskey. Anyway, so what we're talking about, we keep bringing up the kids because there was a high school field trip on this boat, and most of the students died. Most of the 304 killed were these high school students. They were second year high school sophomores, right? They're sophomores or juniors?
That's American. I don't know what those.
Okay, second year or third year out of four. Oh yeah, you're doing Canadian thing. You have grade 13.
No. That was only in Ontario.
Okay. I think they were sophomore. No, it might have been juniors, but they had not taken their college entrance exam yet. They were supposed to graduate in 2016. This happened in 2014. So I think they were sophomores.
There was younger kids as well. They were between the ages of like 14, the students, because there were younger. There were missing body that still hasn't been recovered is a young boy and his two bodies, the boy and his father. Right. And the boy's an elementary school student, same age as my daughter is right now. Yeah. He was the age at that time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, there are other families, other people on board that died, but the majority were from this one school field trip.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that's what captured the nation's consciousness was that. Anyway, very big tragedy. We've done a couple of podcasts about that of one of our disasters of the 2000s, I think it was. We have our disaster series. We talked about it, and then we did a series on we did one episode about the conspiracy theories surrounding it, where we got into more detail. So I should bring up, it did start the downfall of Park Geun-hye, the president at the time. But it really wasn't the one incident that really hurt her. In fact, I have a graph. I'm going to post it on our website, tracking her approval ratings. And there's one line for approve and one line for disapprove. After the sinking of the Sewol, it was the first time that disapproval was higher than the approval numbers, but it wasn't by much, and it still went back down. Like as in, she ended up getting approval again later that year.
Mm. We'll return to the podcast after this message.
In our first comic, we explored ghastly Korean folktales while walking the streets of Seoul. This time, we are ambling the Korean highlands with terror tales set in those storied landscapes. Welcome to the dark side of Seoul, weird tales from Korean lore, Mountains of the Macabre.
Yeah, so many things are going on. It's hard to gauge.
There are a few, but it started gaining momentum. And I think mm-hmm. that's what happened. It was just gaining momentum. So by 2015, it was clear that she was starting really, she was not invulnerable. She was still having, this is still a problem. There's some other controversies. The MERS outbreak, Middle Eastern respiratory disease.
Syndrome.
That was in summer 2015. Mm-hmm. I remember that because I was still in the early stages of my company, and I had a coupon code called "Fuck Mares" to get people to just freaking book a tour. It was so difficult. That's how I was preparing for Corona, because man, I knew what happened with Mares. But but she fucked up Mares too. I mean, she mm. really. It was just such a disaster. That one was, ugh. But then again, she's still, her approval ratings still kind of, at the end of 2015, were kind of okay. But then the Sewol stuff just kept going on. It was just something they just didn't appease people with it. They were really dragging their feet with the investigation. With making, you know, bringing up their scapegoats or whoever they wanted. They're just dragging their feet. They're just making it linger for so long, hoping that people just forget about it, just brushing, you know, sweeping under the rug. And it just, then because of that, it just kept growing and growing and growing. Then by 2016, it was clear that she was more unpopular than she was popular. And then the scandal broke out about her and her confidant, which one day we might do a show on that.
Jason Shield.
About her little Rasputin that she had. And you see this big spike. It just, boom, it diverges. Mm-hmm. The lines just diverge. And that was 2016.
Right. And Thad was going on at that time as well. Right. So there was a cluster.
What is Thad? No, go remind everyone what Thad is.
Thad was the, or Thad is, the system, the missile defense system, the terminal high altitude area defense. Thad, remember, they put it in Korea?
Well, that's what pissed off China.
Right, but that she lost a lot of her support then as well. Because the people in the village where it was put didn't want it there.
Yeah. I think that was still more of an abstract concept for a lot of Koreans compared to the Sewol, though.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, my point is that
Maris. Yeah.
All of these things were happening at the same time. I think everything was clustering together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like nothing was going right.
And then the big one was the finding out the corruption scandals with her confidant, right, and how, you know, she was doing all these things to get her friend's, right, daughter into university. I mean, that's the one that hit everyone.
Yeah.
That's the one that pissed everyone off. It's like, we're working so hard to get our kids in university and you used corruption to get here.
Yeah.
Oh man. It's like, that's the one that's gonna get all the parents involved.
And remember with that as well. Or with that as well, that sharply and very seriously impacted Korean tourism.
It did. It did sharply impact Korean tourism. And that I'm going to bring that up a little bit in the next next topic. But yeah, it's you're right. You're right. Very much so. But it was stuff that involved parents, children, Sewol and her friend's daughter getting into university for free or guaranteed entrance into a high-end university, even though she was pretty dumb.
Like even like as an equestrian and stuff like that, really pricey stuff.
Okay, so yeah, to tell them more about that, because we haven't done an episode on this yet, so we have to say they got EJ Myung, not EJ Myung, God, what's his name? Samsung dude.
EJ Young.
See, I was close. I keep getting confused with the former Gyeonggi governor. Okay.
Lee Myung-jae. Lee Young. Mm.
He looks like a grown-up Harry Potter. got him to get some money to got her a horse. Got this girl a horse and get her to get equestrian, go into equestrianism. And it was easier for her to get a scholarship because not many people go, and it's very easy to do well. Easy to get a scholarship for that because you just don't have that much competition in Korea to get a scholarship for equestrian stuff. Because it's a rich person's sport.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I learned lacrosse was when I was in the lacrosse team.
Yeah. Anyway, let's not get too far away. These are all the things anyway that led to her, but especially Sewol. Yeah.
But Sewol was the start of the first chink in her armor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when she started, because when she was first elected, she was very popular. I remember I was in the U.S. and my stepmom was like, "You've elected a female president. That's really cool." Yeah. Okay, cool. Yes, daughter of the former dictator. Sure. Okay. So what they did? She did her response to, of course, she disappeared for a bit, and the public. It was a Sewol that made the public really pay more attention to it because of just modern media, because the public was watching live on video the ship sinking and these people slowly drowning. And no response from the Blue House this whole time. That's what drove people crazy, was they were watching this happening and still just nothing was done. It's like usually you would cut in and you say, hey, this is a message from the president. What's going on? Nothing. So, yeah, really bad PR. Really just bad at public communication, at perception. PR in general. So they needed a scapegoat. So what the Park Geun-hye administration did was they disbanded the Coast Guard because of their slow response and their inept response. And the Coast Guard was put under the National Police Agency. And then they made a new ministry called the Ministry of Public Safety and Security. It actually has roots to some agency back in 1957. Everything in Korea is always a reorganized ministry or something else. It's not something you really create out of nowhere. It's a reshuffling and rebranding. And so this is a classic case of showing without doing. Image before substance of You see a house that's condemned, and rather than fixing the house, you just put a new coat of paint on it so it looks like it's fine. So what they did was, they just changed the names. Everyone that was in the Coast Guard kept their jobs. No one was punished.
It's like shuffling a cabinet. Just that's it. You don't really get to the source of any problems. You just move people around. It's like the Vatican. And they move priests around.
Yeah. Mm. Somebody actually ended up being promoted in the new structures.
Mm.
It reminds me of this one thing, another digression. There's one woman that I told you about, the woman that wanted to remove Budae Chige from the Lonely Planet guide.
Yes.
Okay. Government person that I was pulled into a meeting because this is her obsession, was removing Budae Chige, Army Base 2, from the Lonely Planet guide and other things. Anything that made Korea look poor. And I found out after this meeting that this is a person that has been shuffled to different types of agencies because no one wants to work with her because she's just off her rocker, crazy, just weirdo, psycho. But she can't be fired. She can't be fired. So they just keep shifting her to different ministries, different agencies all the time. And then she fucks up. She just fucks up everything. This kind of was that she just gets reshuffled like these people were. She doesn't get punished for doing these bad things. She just moved to somewhere else. Mm. So this useless ministry, the Ministry of Public Safety and Security, was disbanded under the next president, Moon Jae-in, the only Korean president who has yet not to have a scandal.
Right. I think there are others. Didn't Kim Dae-jung never had a scandal? He was
he had a relative scandal.
Yeah, his relatives, but
yeah.
He didn't. Right.
But Moon Jae-in, right. Totally clean, man.
And wasn't his wife anything. Involved? Was his wife involved in something?
Kim Dae-jung still had to deal with hearings after his presidency. Moon Jae-in has not. Nothing.
I thought his wife was involved in that big real estate scandal a couple of years ago. No. But that's a different topic. We'll look into it. Different topic.
Anyway, it was disbanded. Mm. The point was that it was just another case of just doing something without doing something for show without actually changing anything. And that was the Park Geun-hye administration in general, was just doing everything for show. Without changing any of the underlying conditions, any of the structures, not fixing anything. And those of you who are following with our Fall of Joseon series, you'll find this pattern of just moving everything around just for show rather than actually doing anything about it. Another after effect would possibly be a negative impact on the economy. This is up for debate, but the facts are there that GDP growth reduced from the beginning of 2014. First quarter of 2014 was 3.9%. Last quarter of 2014 was 2.7%. For an export economy, that's not good, especially when the people you're exporting to, like the US and Europe, were actually growing and recovering. So something was going on there. But you could also, after the say, well, we remember all these events were canceled. Even though people's livelihood depends on these events, they don't matter. Because you can't be happy during these things. But the same thing happened after the Itaewon crush. They canceled a lot of events. So a lot of people lost money that worked in the entertainment industries or anything like that. People stopped spending as much, didn't go out to restaurants as much after the Sewol disaster. So they kind of blamed it on that. But mayors that summer, mayors later on also helped with that, but that was next year, so that doesn't make sense. But anyway, the economy did contract a bit. Also, the government couldn't spend much to handle this disaster quickly. They had low tax income, which they could have gotten some taxes if they just start taxing the Chabal a little more. And the previous conservative Emil Beck administration, same party as Park Geun-hye, had saddled them with a ton of debt because, you know, Emil Beck was the guy who kept wanting to build stuff. He wanted to make his canals that went through all the way through Korea, which I live next to one of them.
Before Grand Canal.
His canals. So anyway, he's out of the country with a lot of debt from his big legacy projects. So, could have possibly negatively damaged the economy. There are some numbers to go with it, but of course, you know, correlation does not mean causation. We don't know. But one thing, though, I did find interesting was how it affected Korean shipping. Because one of the main reasons why the Sewol shifted and was able to shift so strongly was it was not just ferrying passengers and vehicles. It was also shipping freight. Like a lot of times you might find out, you know, a lot of people don't know that sometimes commercial airplanes that you're flying on is also carrying mail and packages. They stopped using small and medium sized ships for this purpose because they're not as safe. Newer ships and larger ships are much safer and they have more safety features. So this incident stopped the use of using small and medium sized ships for shipping. So it disrupted the shipping industry. The people themselves avoided passenger ships. I remember that.
Yeah.
People stopped using ferries and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were even scared of kayaks. I don't know.
I remember, this wasn't talked about at any high level, but I was hearing people talk about the possibility of building a bridge from like Gwangju to Jeju to the northern.
I'm going to bring up something at the end about that.
Okay.
Really right. Cool. It's similar to that, but yeah.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. But Chunghae Jin Shipping, which is owned the Sewol Ferry, they were closed, and that they were the only, they had a monopoly on the route between Incheon and Jeju. So there were no more routes from Incheon to Jeju, from the Seoul area, basically to Jeju Island, which had the side effect of increasing flight traffic between Gimpo and Jeju. Gimpo and Seoul to Jeju. So, because you couldn't go by boat. So suddenly people were relying only on airplanes. That's the only way you can get to Jeju. No one wanted to ride a boat to Jeju. You had to take an airplane. And it got so congested that, so the demand was so great. They started using larger, Boeing 747s to handle all this traffic. And it wasn't just Jeju. It wasn't just ferries going to Jeju. Water traffic all around Korea decreased, so air traffic around domestic air travel increased a lot more after this. The government had before in 2009 rolled back they had a deregulation that allowed companies to use older ships. They got rid of that deregulation, rolled it back. And said you can't do that anymore. And on top of that, they created a financial aid system to help in building new ships. And there was this one ship that was built at the very beginning. It was three times the size of the Sewol, and that is now the standard that's being built now for this new program. The government is starting to standardize ships and ferries and such. The thing is, even though with these ships that are three times the size of the Sewol, we didn't really have any ports that accommodate them. So Daeju Construction, they had purchased a ship from China that was only 2 years old, so that was perfectly within the realm, because the government was banning the use of used ships that were over 15 or 20 years old. But they bought one that was only 2 years old, really large one. And they're trying to reestablish the route from Incheon to Jeju. They went out of business because they couldn't find a place to dock in Incheon. Their ship was too big.
Crazy.
You think it, you know.
just planning from the top down.
Yeah, you think.
Silly.
It's like, I got this really big TV and I can't fit it through my door. All right. As far as the latest I've heard is 2021, another company has reestablished the route. There's a ship called the Queen Jay, and it's the only ship that runs the route. It takes longer than expected because it's a larger ship, and because of that, it's harder for it to navigate stronger currents, so it goes out into deeper waters, and it avoids that problematic area that current that helped sink the Sewol, because the ship did this hard hairpin turn that made it tip over because of the currents.
Among other problems,
but because there was inexperienced people at the wheel while everyone else is getting drunk. Another after effect of the Sewol, there's more helicopter parenting. Parents were really more conscious about what was happening to their kids when they were left for school. There was a big boom of school field trips, and I remember, you know, me being a teacher and you doing that as well. We were on field trips all the freaking time. Hated them. But it was an industry. It kind of really reduced that. But the Sewol was the only thing that reduced stuff like this. I mean, there is precedence to this. We've talked about this before in our disasters episodes. The Sealand Youth Training Center fire of 1999. That killed the industry for overnight summer camps for young children. We talked about that where it was near Suwon, wasn't it? It was an overnight camping facility, and people were using that for summer camps, and the kids would spend the night there, do stuff, and they were killed in a fire. And after that, you don't see these summer camps anymore, overnight summer camps for young children. And after the Sewol, the country was not doing a lot of school field trips anymore. It started to come back, but then Corona hit. COVID-19 also killed a lot of the field trips. One day, because in my research, I did come across a page on the history of school field trip disasters. I think that's for another show.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a big list. I think this is for another show. I'll just talk about school field trip disasters. I hear they're coming back now again, but we'll see. Also, after the Sewol, there's more efforts. More kids were homeschooled. And Corona also compounded this feeling of there's more activism in the parental communities. So, and also another side effect, this is, you never thought about this, the Sewol and MERS may have contributed to Korea's quick adoption of masks and other safety measures at the beginning of COVID-19.
I'd probably say that could be part of it. I heard that talked about, or I remember reading, people were talking about that, mm-hmm, early on in the pandemic.
Yeah. It also was likely the reason why South Korea was relatively slow in lifting the mask mandates.
Hmm.
Was the experience with the Sewol tragedy and MERS. Because, yeah, I remember MERS was so sloppily done. And so then I saw how the country handled COVID-19. I went, oh, yes. You figured, wow, we're actually a world leader in this. So, yeah, I was proud of the country when we after the corona thing. But part of – it brings me back to this university – course I took on cultural intelligence and Korea, Japan, this area, there's this one category where they're actually stronger in risk avoidance, can you believe, than risk tolerance. And you're like, but Joe, but you see a Korea's safety standards, but yeah, I didn't say reckless intolerance. I say risk intolerance, as in just scared of, I don't know how to describe this. It's really hard for me to put it, but it does fit in with me why Korea is way more cautious about lifting the mask mandates. It is this risk aversion. Now, Japan's, I think, is a little more on the extreme edge of the risk aversion part of the equation, but Korea is part of the same region that was put into this category of they're kind of high on risk avoidance. Very cautious about trying new things or trying to dipping the toes in the water a lot of times before taking action on some things. I'll go into that in more detail. It's one of my half-baked thoughts. I haven't really figured out a way to intelligently say more about it. But anyway, one day I'm going to sit down. I'm going to go through this whole course, and I'm going to show like this. Oh yeah, okay. This is where they say Korea fits in. And do you agree or disagree? It'll be fun. That'll be a fun show. The Danwon High School, where most of the students are from, after the disaster, they created 10 memorial classrooms, the homerooms for all of the students. They were reserved as 10 memorial classrooms. They would not change. They were left exactly the way they were, as in tribute to them, as museum, kind of like museums, just as memorials. Mm-hmm. Thing was, this is a relatively small school because it was built on top of a hill.
Mm.
And so the next school year, they didn't have enough classrooms for all their students coming in. And so the school was thinking of just reopening those classrooms because the students had nowhere to go, and the bereaved families blocked the school from reopening the classrooms. Okay. School is scrambling to try to find a place to put these students.
That's a difficult thing to talk about. But, I mean... there are still students that need to be educated.
Yeah, it's really, yeah, it wasn't clear cut. This one is like, yeah, I see both sides of this one.
Yeah. Yeah.
The only thing you say is maybe, you know, the school could have planned new classrooms, kind of had a summer to figure it out.
Well, they may not have had the funding for it. We know schools are underfunded.
But actually, right? That was true, too. That was in my research. They didn't really have much funding for
it. Yeah. Just a memorial hall would have been... I'm sure if they collected money from donors and had a fundraiser. And I know they eventually have done that. I know there's a memorial at the school grounds. But that should have just been from step one.
Yeah. Well, the memorial classrooms still do exist, and they have a website. I'll see if I can remember to post the website on our website, but there is a website for the memorial classrooms. Now the interesting thing, by law, the students that were drowned, that were killed on the Sewol, they had to be expelled.
Mm.
Yeah. But there was a big stink because they expelled four of the missing students. They weren't confirmed dead.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a big stink about that. And so they rescinded and they did not expel the four missing students.
Right.
But yeah, that's you never think about that. When something like that happens, formally they have to be expelled.
Yeah.
There was talks about having a memorial graduation for them, but that became another can of worms, so that didn't happen. Mm-hmm. Also a special act was created to get 86 of the top universities to reserve 1% of their quotas for students from that class of Don Juan High School. No. That was also controversial.
Yeah, I'm not entirely for this type of memorial. The memorials like that, they're hard to talk against because they are, the issues are so sensitive, but 1% may seem like a small number, but and I guess it is, but at the same time, if you create a memorial system in a way that impacts people coming later,
mm-hmm.
that weren't directly affected or impacted, and if it just it's a nice idea, but there are, I think there are, we still have to be very logical about how we mourn, mm-hmm. especially as we get farther away from the time and life does have to go on.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's complicated. It's a really complicated kind of thing.
It is.
But right from the get-go, this type of thing just ideally shouldn't be even proposed.
Well, like, politicians, electioneers, stuff like that.
Yeah, they should have just donated money to build a big, beautiful memorial hall.
Mm-hmm.
For them on the school grounds.
Yeah, one of the arguments against it was, well, the students that would get into these upper end universities without having the grades to get in there, they might, drop out and fail. And like, well, from what I've heard about Korean universities from actual teachers there, professors, no.
Yeah.
No, you work really hard to get a university, and then it's smooth sailing after that.
No. Right.
No. No. Not as challenging as what people think. Mm. Okay, the final thing that is, I'm going to talk about this Jeju Undersea Tunnel.
Okay, I don't think I've ever heard of this.
Yeah, so this one got my eye. I heard the bridge. I've heard of the bridge. Mm-hmm. The mm-hmm. tunnel. This was proposed in 2007 and just kept being shopped around, but it really got some traction after the Sewol disaster. Really started getting on, but in the end, there's no end yet, but it was decided to just build a second airport on Jeju Island. But this...
That was controversial as well. I was working at Jeju Air when that was not, that's a different thing as well. Mm-hmm. Very, very complicated issue.
Yeah. It keeps getting resurfaced during political campaigns. Basically the mayors, the governors of that area keep trying to put it into campaigns. They try to make it part of Lee Jae-myung's presidential campaign, which didn't happen. But it just keeps coming back. It just keeps coming back. It's a boondoggle. It's a giant boondoggle. I mean, one day we might get our tunnel.
Yeah, I mean.
What would that do?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, a tunnel between Busan and Fukuoka, Japan, makes more sense.
Well, how so?
Economy, just for economy, because you're connecting a large economic power with another economic power.
For shipping, then you're talking about like transport, cargo,
transport, and just in general, just getting the movement of people. Jeju's a vacation destination. You're just doing a tunnel for a vacation destination. That's going to cost trillions of dollars.
Well, they
how are you going to make that money back? You're not going to have that much tourism.
They did it in Europe.
With the tunnel?
Yeah.
That was connecting Great Britain and Europe.
In the mainland, yeah.
Yeah.
But I know it's a larger population area, but I mean, I don't know. I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think it's.
No, I mean, I'm not saying it's not possible. Thing, I'm just saying about economically makes sense. The channel got paid back what was invested in it because of all of the smooth traffic now between Europe and the UK. I don't see that traffic happening between South Korea and Jeju. I don't see that.
Well,
I don't know.
I mean, there are multiple. I don't know how many people right now. I don't know how many people travel between, say, Seoul, say Gimpo and Jeju, but there are multiple flights a day and a lot of them are full business. But the big problem is that it would only connect, say, it would probably go from like Busan.
There's no point
in putting it from, say, Gaje or something like that.
It is from one of the islands. They were changing which island it was. So what they are building bridges, and they're talking about making the tunnel for the rest of the way. It's a cool concept, but it's still, the more I think about it, it's kind of like Jeju's not important enough to justify a tunnel like this, the expenses and everything.
No. Well, yeah,
a bridge, not a tunnel.
I think both of them I think aren't going to happen, but I don't know. It's a different thing. I think Jeju's plenty important in terms of domestic tourism. It's the most important place in Korea, hands down. No other place domestically in Korea is nearly as popular as Jeju domestically.
Yeah,
for domestic tourism. About
but how it would help tourism more to do a bridge between Busan and Fukuoka.
Well, no. Oh, for well, okay. It helps. Well, definitely would help tourism in Fukuoka.
Japan and Korea.
No, but again, the problem is that the bridge going from the south coast of Korea, if it went from, say, Gaje or a little bit farther west towards Suncheon, but right on the coast, there's just not a big enough population there. Because the majority of people that do go to Jeju domestically do come from up around here. So,
yeah.
There wouldn't be a big enough numbers of people traveling to get the money back for a bridge or a tunnel for either
one.
That's
what I'm saying. Yeah. It's just not going to be tax money. You're not going to make it back for a long time.
Yeah.
And then if you do, what's the environmental and social economic impact on the island? The island's already getting really impacted by tourism.
Well, the second airport's going to do the same thing too.
Yeah.
It's not going to matter.
That's true.
The second airport is, it's going to turn out that they're very likely going to have to, I'm not sure if they've determined this yet, but build an island, do a man-made island.
Well, I mean, we're going to record the next time we're recording a show. I likely will be in Jeju next time we're recording a show. So I'll give you a on the ground report.
Yeah. Cause I was working for Jeju Air and I was very close with the head of marketing, and he was telling me about all the problems that they were having, that Jeju Air was having, but the problems that the government was having getting that airport off the ground, to use that term for an airport. But I haven't heard much. Yeah. I haven't heard about it in a while.
Okay. I was going to make a list of movies for media recommendations. No, I'm not going to do that.
No, we'll leave the listener mail for today as well.
Yeah, and also in my research, there were lots and lots of songs and such that talked to, that referenced the Sewol or were allusions to the Sewol. skipped over that because
I would
zone you out talking about them.
I think we talked about that in the episode, didn't we?
We did, but there's more. We've already added more stuff now. There's more stuff.
Sure.
That's been done.
So I guess I think we've already mentioned it, but for anyone who hasn't, go back and listen to the previous episode about the conspiracies surrounding the post-sinking sinking and whatnot.
Yeah,
we go into quite a bit of detail of the disaster, but the conspiracies were interesting.
Yeah,
a lot of strange things.
Episode 108. Wow, that far back. All right. Well, anyway, we're going to wrap things up a bit. Remind you, we have our comics available over at Dice and Comics Cafe near Jeonghyun Station. You can also get them online at darksideofsoul.com, where you can get the electronic version, or we can mail it to you all the way from Korea. The Dark Side of Soul podcast is produced by Joe McPherson and Sean Morrissey. Our opening and closing music is by Sarek-san, which you can find on Bandcamp under Jeju Digital. We'd like to thank our top-tier patrons, Angel, Earl, Joel,
Bonham. Nice yawn there, Joe. Nice yawn there, Joe, by the way.
Oh, man, I was really trying to cover it up. All right. Angel, Earl, Joel Bonamini, Sharon Cullen, Devin Hifner, Gabby Palomino, Steve Marsh, Mitchie Brewer, Ron Chang, Mackenzie Moore, Hunter Winter, Cecilia Lufkintama, Emily Umbau, Josephine Riedberg, David Weatherly, Janice Song, Devin Buchanan, Edward Bradford, and Eva Sakura. Thank you for joining us as our Dokkaebi, our Den of Dokkaebi. You too can support the show and also get a lot of extra stuff by going to patreon.com/darksideofsoul and starting just $5 a month. You can get a lot of extra stuff. All right, guys, anyway, be careful out there. Until next time, stay spooky.
Good night.